I've been thinking about this, and one of my favorite, I don't know, examples, I guess, favorite men in the Bible, is the man that God calls a man after his own heart, and that is David, and the things that he went through. But I want to start out here. Let's go to John, the 15th chapter, and this is what Christ told his disciples. And this is where we are, what we are, you know, we just read about the way this world thinks. Now, we don't think that way. So where does that put us? Well, it puts us in a situation that's not real comfortable. John, the 15th chapter, and verse 17. These things I command you, that you love one another. If the world hate you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world, now we're not of the world, brethren. We don't think like the world. We don't believe what the world believes. There was a time when we had, in this country many years ago, fairly common basic principles of right and wrong. But those have so quickly, just in the last 10 years or so, and even in the last 5 years, gone out the window so fast, it's just hard. Now it's like we're on two different planets. If they were of the world would love his own. I knew a fellow who worked for AT&T on the East Coast. He went to a prestigious college. He was in the fraternity, and he did all the things everybody does, and he got hired by AT&T and promoted right up the line in managerial training. And he had a nice office. He had a secretary that worked for him, and he had about, I don't know, 25 or 50 people that worked under him. And he had a very substantial income until he came into church. All of a sudden, he wasn't part of the group anymore. He eventually left the company and went to work for some other companies as a consultant and so on. And God has taken good care of him. But it was very interesting talking with him because he just went, like he said, I was just paddling downstream like everybody else, and he was one of the boys, and you know, he went to the gym and he did whatever his sorority or his fraternity buddies did, and they all got promoted and they were all making lots of money and everybody was happy. And then when he began to realize that now he was going to have to paddle upstream, it changed the whole environment and the whole dynamic. So, this is what Christ is telling us, brethren. If the world hate you, you know it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own. And they love each other. They do. They, you know, the fraternities and the college buddies, and you go to the Ivy League schools, and you get referred in these jobs by so-and-so, and the families have all these reputations. And as I explained to my son, who was trying to get back into University of Illinois down here in Champaign-Urbana, we went in and talked to the dean, and I won't go through the whole explanation, but God gave us favor in his eyes, and it was the old, you know, the dean said, well, I'm not even going to consider his application right now. You have to do so-and-so. And I said, well, we're the ones who got transferred around. We're originally from Illinois, and, you know, he's scored very, very high in his SATs, and he's already done all these college-level courses, and he should be going into his junior year, and now we're moved back here, and he wants to do electrical engineering. And then we had certain common things with Caterpillar and people that we knew there. And by the time we were done talking, he said, well, I'll look at it. And I knew that meant he'll get in. And he did. And as I told my son as we left, well, Tom, I said, it's not necessarily what you know, it's who you know. And in this case, it was God giving us favor. But that's how the world works. It isn't just a cut and dry deal. It's a lot of it depends on who you know, what you know, your associations, your friends, all of these things. If you were of the world would love you, love his own, but because you are not of the world, and that's going to get clearer and clearer every single day, how we aren't of this world. We're not even close to what this world believes. And you just don't want to be voicing that too loudly. You just live your life and set a good example, because all you're going to do is stir up difficulty. But I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. So we may not have run into this. I have run into this already, but not everyone has. Remember the word that I said to you, that the servant is not greater than his Lord. If they have persecuted me, they have also persecuted you, or they will persecute you. If they have kept my sayings, they will keep yours also. But all these sayings will they do unto you for my name, or things will they do unto you for my name's sake, because they know not him that sent me. People don't understand who God is. They're on a totally different thought level. They look at things differently, and the whole society is now being educated with the wrong premises in their mind. And that's what they're being taught, and surprisingly, people are buying it hook, line, and sinker. It's a sad thing. John 16 and verse 32, it says, behold, the hour comes, yes, now is come, that you shall all be scattered, every man to his own. Now, this is just before Christ was crucified and when he was taken. And shall leave me alone, and yet I am not alone, because the Father is with me. But of course we know that eventually the Father stepped back and allowed these things to transpire. These things I have spoken to you, that in me you might have peace. In the world you shall have tribulation. But be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. So if we look for peace in this world, and there are people who in the past, and you've probably heard of them, you know, oh, this way of God, this is a big bondage, and if I could just be out there in the world, I could be free to do what I want. Well, go do it then. Good luck to you, buddy. You'll be free, all right. Free to get into trouble. You'll find out, as my grandfather used to say. And many people have. And they've gone out with that idea. And they are going to go do their own thing. And 5 or 10 years later, they came to the realization, this isn't such a good idea. Maybe I had a good thing where I was. And many of them come back. So he said, if you're in the world, you're going to, in other words, if you are doing what God says, you're going to have tribulation, but be of good cheer. He said, I've overcome the world. And this is what we have to keep remembering. And our peace comes from God, not in this society. We're not going to have peace as a result of that. And then finally here, before we get into David's example, Matthew, the 10th chapter and verse 16. Now, these are all the words of Christ. First, this whole chapter talks about sending the 12 out, giving them the power over demons and the power to heal. And the disciples went out, and he instructed them in verse 7 to preach. When you go out and you do these things, he said, preach the kingdom of heaven, or that the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And you know, and all the things, instructions that he gave. And in verse 16, then he warns them, and he said, behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. Now, we have a sheep farmer here. And if a wolf gets into the flock of sheep, wolf can be, what, 100 pounds, 90, maybe 125, whatever. I mean, they're powerful animals. And trust me, little baby sheep or even a full-size ewe is no match for that kind of an animal attacking them. Behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. Be you therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves. So he's telling us, don't unnecessarily put yourself in a bad position. Don't necessarily, or, you know, foolishly bring persecution and criticism and troubles upon yourself, because it'll come in its own time. But verse 17, but beware of men, for they will deliver you up to the councils, and they will scourge you in the synagogue. And you shall be brought before governors and kings for my name's sake, for a witness or a testimony against them and the Gentiles. And when they deliver you up, don't worry about what you're going to speak. For in verse 20, for it is not you that speak, but the Spirit of your Father which speaks in you. And God's Spirit will give you inspiration. The point being, like I said, learn how to keep your mouth shut. Because you don't want to bring unnecessary difficulty upon yourself. There's enough out there to, without having to bring it upon yourselves. And he talks about being persecuted and so on, because, well, verse 21, and you shall be ultimately hated of all men for my name's sake, but he that endures to the end shall be saved. So it's not going to be easy. And David set us an example of that same situation. He was a very, very zealous young man. A very zealous young man. Now, Saul was supposed to be, you have to understand, you know, go back and get the chronology correct. Saul was supposed to be the David in the line. He was supposed to be the one to be the king and to be faithful to God and to do all that. And he started out pretty good. And God had chosen him. He had him anointed and set aside as the king. And God was with him, and he gave him his spirit, the Bible says very clearly. And God blessed his all of his fighting and all the things, and driving out the Philistines and the other enemies. And the enemies were fleeing before him. Until he began to start thinking for himself. When he stopped looking to God and stopped submitting to God's Holy Spirit, which he had received, and started pushing that aside and started getting his own ideas. Well, after all, I'm the king around here. And I think, I know God said to kill off everybody, including the king, the enemy, and man, woman, children, animals, and everything. But, you know, the people suggested, and I thought it was a good idea, we'll just save the best animals, and we'll sacrifice those to God, which God said he wasn't interested in. He wanted him to annihilate everybody and everything. and he had a good reason. We just read what mankind can stoop to. Man can go lower than an animal because animals have instinct. And that's what they're locked into. Men can come up with their own ideas. And they're capable of doing worse things. And I'm sure that the society that God said to annihilate had sunk to that point. And he, because even animals become perverted, it just becomes a mess. I'm not going to go into details on that. But there was a very good reason why God said, get rid of everything. And he didn't do that. And Samuel came and he said, What do I hear? The animals lowing there and the whatever? I thought you were supposed to kill everything. Yeah, but... And he starts giving the excuse. Instead of doing what David did later on, when he was shown to be wrong, repented immediately and acknowledged immediately where he'd done. I don't see any example in the Bible where David tried to justify what he did once he understood the truth. Once he understood where he was wrong and saw it, he acknowledged it immediately. That's the difference. Saul still was trying to do his own thing. Well, God removed his spirit from Saul. God said, I'm sorry I made him king. But he said, I found another one. And he told Samuel here, and I'm going to be going through this. I've just printed out. There were 1,100 times when the name of David is used in the Bible. 1,100 plus. And I'm going to try to just hit the spots that mention David's name. And that kind of gives us an overview, and I'll try to fill this story in. But I just think that he's such an extremely good example, and with the fact that God calls him a man after his own heart, not because he was perfect, because he was not. He made his own mistakes. But he had a heart to follow God. And when he realized he was wrong, when he was corrected, he changed immediately. Now look at David's passion and look at David's attitude. But you will see what, you know, Saul represented the world that we just read about that we're being thrown into. Saul thought like the world. He thought at the beginning like God, following God's ways, but eventually he became carnal-minded and thought like the world. So he represented the attitude of the world. And I have run into that attitude at least four times in my life, which has caused my wife and I a great deal of stress. But it has helped strengthen us as well. Okay, so in 1 Samuel, and this is where we're going to be running here, 1 Samuel 16, and we're going to try to, I'll see how far I can get here in the story. But 1 Samuel 16 and verse 13, Samuel took the horn of oil after God said, okay, I've found someone to replace Saul, and anointed him in the midst of his brethren. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. So Samuel rose up and went to Ramah. Now you'll also have to know that the background, once Samuel had dealt with Saul over this issue of not annihilating everybody, and Samuel himself grabbed the sword and hacked Agag, I believe was the name of the king. And king was going Agag because he got hacked up by the prophet. And just think about that. When God says do it, you better do it. He has a reason. So he removed the spirit from Saul and he gave it to David. Now I don't know, in this story it doesn't specifically say that Saul really comprehended that. I don't even know that he realized it. But here was David now, anointed to be king over Israel. He hadn't taken the job, kind of like Christ, you know. Christ came here and he preached and he did all these things, but he has not taken over the job of ruling this world. He has all the power and he has the influence or whatever he needs to do to cause things to turn out properly in the end. But he hasn't taken that position yet. And in David's case, it was the same way. David, in his particular case, was a young man, very young man. And, you know, he didn't become king until he was 30 years old. Well, we're going to be reading about everything that happened to him before he was 30. All the lessons that he learned. Pretty amazing. But look at his super enthusiasm towards God. In chapter 16 and verse 19 now, where he said, "Wherefore Saul sent messengers to Jesse," who was his father. And Jesse was a well-known aged man who everyone knew and respected. And said, "Send me David your son, which is with the sheep." Because he knew how to play, the harp or whatever instrument it was. And Saul was having difficulties because it says an evil spirit from the Lord, but the Lord does not have evil spirits in his administration. But it was an evil spirit allowed to affect Saul because Satan can't do anything unless God allows it. "Wherefore Saul sent messenger to Jesse. He said, 'Send me David your son. He's with the sheep.' And Jesse took a donkey laden with bread and a bottle of wine and a kid and sent them by David, his son, to Saul." You know, they wanted to show respect for the king. "And David came to Saul and stood before him." Now I'm in verse 21. "And he loved him greatly. And everyone that dealt with David, God gave David great favor in their eyes, because the whole nation loved him. Jonathan loved him. One of Saul's daughters certainly loved him. But he was just a very enthusiastic and a very willing servant, one that was willing to do whatever and to help out and to serve. And he was already serving diligently, not in some great glorious position, but serving his father in a very diligent way, taking care of the sheep out there by himself, and which we'll hear more about from his own mouth. And he loved him greatly, and he became his armor bearer. And then verse 22, "Saul sent Jesse, saying, 'Let David, I pray you, stand before me, for he has found favor in my sight.'" And you'll see that term used a lot in reference to David in dealing with people. But that was from God. God gave him favor in the eyes of those he was working with, and that's something we should all be praying for, that God will grant us favor in the eyes of those who we deal with. We want peace. We don't want war, and we don't want to be foolish. We want to be wise in how we deal with the people in this world. And we want to be able to get along with them and have favor in their eyes, and God will give that to us. Doesn't mean we're not going to run into problems. "And it came to pass when the evil spirit from God," which I already explained, "was upon Saul, that David took the harp and played with his hands, so that Saul was refreshed and was well, and the evil spirit departed from him." And that's chapter 16, 23. Now we jump to chapter 17. "Now David," in verse 12, "now David was the son of that Ephraimite, Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse. And he had eight sons," and I'm not going to pronounce all these words correctly, "whose name was Jesse. And he had eight sons, and the man went among men for an old man in the days of Saul." In other words, he was one of the elders or one of the well-respected individuals as an elderly man. And David was the youngest, and the three eldest brothers of his followed Saul. They were in the army, and they were trying to do what they could to be part of the administration there. But David went and returned. He didn't join up with Saul as far as the administration. David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep in Bethlehem, or at Bethlehem. And Jesse said, now I'm in verse 17 of chapter 17, Jesse said unto David his son, take now for your brethren an ephah of this parched corn and 10 loaves, and run to the camp to your brethren. So he told his dad said, here, take these things to your brethren who are at this camp. And, of course, there was a war going on. And David rose up early in the morning. He left the sheep with a keeper. He found someone to watch over them, because you can't just leave them out there by themselves. And took what he was supposed to do, as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the trench as the host was going forth to fight, and he shouted for the battle. This shows his attitude. He's like, yeah, he's cheering these guys on. Go! Because he was 100% behind Israel and 100% behind the battle. And David left his carriage in the hand of a keeper of the carriage and ran into the army, and he came and saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up a champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spoke according to the same words, and David heard them. That was chapter 17, verse 23. Now I'm going to go here and fill in the whole story here in 1 Samuel 17, because I don't want to miss these verses here. This is pretty interesting. 1 Samuel 17, and let's see, we'll start in 22, I guess. Well, yeah, I don't want to go way back there. Anyway, the Philistines, the Goliath, of course, was challenging in verse 26. And David spoke to the men and stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that kills this Philistine and takes away reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered after him in this manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that kills him. And David was outraged because of what Goliath was opening his mouth and saying and defying God. And he said, who has the right to defy the armies of the living God? And Eliab, his eldest brother, in verse 28, heard when he spoke unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David. Here's this little pipsqueak kid, you know, the youngest of the brothers, typical brother to brother. And he said, well, what did you come down here for? With whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and your naughtiness in your heart, for you are come down so that you might see the battle. And so he made this accusation, not knowing that his own father had sent David down there. And David said, what have I done? A typical brother reaction. Isn't there some cause, or what's the problem here? And he turned from him towards another, and he spoke after the same manner, and the people answered him again after the former manner. And when the words were heard which David had spoken about the uncircumcised Philistine challenging the armies of God, they were rehearsed or repeated to Saul, and so he sent for him. Of course, Saul already knew David. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go out and fight this Philistine. And Saul said to David, oh, you're just a kid. You're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him. You are but a youth and a man of war. He's been a man of war from his youth. And he had to be in his early 20s at this time. And David said to Saul, your servant kept your father's, or his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went out after him, and I smote him, and I delivered him out of the mouth. And when he rose against me, I caught him by the beard, and I killed him. And the servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God. Now, this is a person who is faithful to God and really trusts God, and as a result of his trust in God, God gave him the strength and the power to do what he did, and he knew it. And David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion, he didn't take credit himself, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to him, go, and the Lord be with you. And Saul armed David with armor, and he had all this armor on and a sword and everything. And finally he says, I can't do this. Big old clunky stuff. So he took everything off in verse 39, and he took his staff in his hand, and he chose five smooth stones out of the brook and put them in the shepherd's bag, which he had even in a scrip. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. Now, obviously, he had had plenty of practice out in, you know, herding the sheep or the being the sheep shepherd. When you're out there by yourself, let's get some practice. So he was pretty good with this thing, and obviously God guided his aim very accurately. And the Philistine, in verse 41, came on and drew near to David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and he saw David, he disdained him. Here's this punk kid coming out there with no armor on and a slingshot. Hello. This is a joke. He was insulted. And he saw David and he disdained him, for he was but a youth and a ruddy and fair countenance. He wasn't a tough-looking guy. And verse 43, and the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come out here with these staves and sticks to try to fight me? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I'll give your flesh to the fowls of the air and the beasts of the field. And David said to the Philistine, no, you come to me with a sword and with a spear and with the shield, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. And this day the Lord will deliver you to my hand, and I will smite you, and I will take your head off, and I will give it to the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day, and unto the fowls of the air, to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Once again, not taking credit for himself, but giving it all to God, zealously supporting God's way of life and his power. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saved not with the sword and not with the spear, for the battle, in verse 47 here, is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. Well, it came to pass when the Philistine arose and came and drew nigh to meet David. David hasted. He ran towards the army to meet the Philistine, and David put his hand in the bag, took out the stone, and he slung it right at him and smote the Philistine in the forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell on his face appropriately to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with the sling and with the stone and smote the Philistine, and then he slew him. But, in other words, he got it, took his own sword and chopped his head off. And verse 51, and therefore David ran and stood upon the Philistine and took the sword and drew it out of his sheath thereof and slew him and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they hightailed it out of there. And the men of Israel arose, and they shouted and pursued the Philistines until they came to the valley, and the gates of and the wounded of the Philistines fell down by the way, even unto Gath and unto, you know, and the children of Israel returned after chasing them, and they spoiled their tents. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his armor in his tent. And when Saul saw David go forth, verse 55, against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the captain of the host, "Abner, whose son is this youth?" And Abner said, "As your soul lives, O king, I cannot tell." And the king said, "Inquire you whose son this stripling is." And as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistines, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, "Whose son are you, you young man?" And David answered and said, "I am the son of the servant, your servant Jesse, of Bethlehem," there, or Bethlehemite. But I just want you to see his incredible enthusiasm and his total dedication for God's way and God's support. And he was going to defend God's way no matter what. And he depended on God to see him through this thing. And that is incredible, and, you know, godly enthusiasm, if you want to use that term. And pretty exciting to see as an example. Well, unfortunately, that was the beginning of David's troubles. Because I'm trying to find here further down, it came to pass when he, and this is in chapter 18 and verse 1, and it came to pass when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. Now, Jonathan, of course, was Saul's son. And once again, there was this great rapport between the two of them, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul, and Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him and gave it to David and his garments, even his sword, and to his bow and to his girdle. And David went out whithersoever Saul sent him, and he behaved himself wisely. Where do you think wisely came from? It came from God's Spirit that he had received. And he was submitting to God's way and seeking God all the time. And Saul's, I mean, he didn't depend on God by some kind of happenstance. He obviously had communication with God on a daily basis, and he had a very close relationship with God. And he was praying to God. As we see, he constantly sought God's direction and guidance. So there was this deep personal relationship there between David and the Lord. Okay, now I lost my spot here. Okay, he said, and David went out wherever Saul sent him, and he behaved himself wisely. This is chapter 18 and verse 5. And Saul set him over the men of war. And he was this young guy. He was probably no more than, at this point, in the mid-20s. And he was accepted in the sight of all people. Now, that's pretty incredible. When you have his men of war, who are grizzled, experienced fighters who've been in battle after battle after battle, and of course they saw what David did, they were all there, but for them to accept him as their leader, he was accepted in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of Saul's servants. Highly respected. And why was that? Because he was following God's way, and because God was giving him favor in the eyes, and God was giving him wisdom. And it came to pass as they came, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Philistines, that the women came out of the city of Israel, and this was really the beginning of David's troubles, that the women came out of all the cities of Israel singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tabrets, with joy, and with instruments of music. And the women answered one another as they played, and they said, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. Oh, great. That just made Saul jump up and down. Yeah, it did make him jump up and down, except the wrong way. Chapter 18 and verse 8. Saul was angry. He was wroth. He was really bent out of shape. And the sayings displeased him. And he said, they have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and unto me they've only ascribed 1,000s. And what can he have more but the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day forward. Now you think about that. Why did Saul eye David? Keep an eye on this guy. Because he was afraid that he was going to take away his position. He was envious, he was jealous, and he was threatened. Now, I've been through that, like I said, 3 or 4 times in my life, and it has been a very painful experience, and I can definitely relate to what David went through for years. Because those kind of trials, I mean, each one of us, I guess, has various types of trials God chooses to give us. But if you're enthusiastic for God's way, and you're trying to work hard at it, and Gail and I have talked about this, and he's experienced some of the same things in his life. Sorry to say, I can relate to. Where members or people who call themselves members of the church, who all ended up leaving, who were kind of like Saul. They started out probably okay, but then they got carnal-minded. And they got uncomfortable. And the harder a person worked to try to do a good job, the more they resented and were intimidated by that. Now, some people, unfortunately, I found myself in that position, are much more intimidating to others than other people. Some people are much more placid. I mean, look at David's brothers. They weren't making those kind of statements. Saul wasn't after them. He wasn't worried about them. But David was very outspoken, and he was very enthusiastic, and he was very aggressive. And that intimidates people. That's just the way it is. And Saul was definitely intimidated greatly. And so, from this day forward, Saul was after him. Now, Saul had lost God's power in his spirit. He was still in the job. And I've observed this, where God has allowed people to stay in positions for a long time and continued to cause people lots of trouble. But eventually, God gives everybody a chance, and he's very fair, and he's very patient. But eventually, they come to their own doom, and they end up, as far as God's church is concerned, they end up leaving. And everyone who has conducted himself in this manner, willfully, I've seen that happen to. So it came to pass in chapter 18, verse 10, on the morrow, that an evil spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied in the midst of the house, and David played with his hand, as at other times, and there was a javelin in Saul's hand, and here was David playing for him, and Saul cast the javelin For he said, I will smite David even to the wall. And David avoided out of his presence twice. So he ducked twice. Now that gave David definitely the impression that he was trying to kill him. And so now David had to be, verse 18, or chapter 18 and verse 12, it says, and Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him and was departed from Saul. Now, Saul didn't fully understand that God had departed from him, but he could see that God was with David. And that made him scared to death, because God was supporting David. And that meant that Saul was worried about his line, and that was his big concept here, his big concern, was that his son would not be able to carry on, and that David would take over, and that Saul himself would lose his position, and his family or his line wouldn't continue as king. But in 1 Samuel 18 and verse 14, and David behaved himself wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. Now that's the difference. We want God to be with us, and we want to be totally dedicated. Now God was with him, but that didn't mean that people were happy about it. Remember what Christ said? I'm sending you out there with the wolves. And Saul kind of did represent the way the world thinks. And when someone starts obeying what God says and following his ways, and God is blessing them, that intimidates people. When God was blessing my business, people were envious, and they were jealous, and they saw how God was blessing it. Of course, they didn't understand that it was God that was blessing it. And they just said, oh, you're the luckiest guy I've ever seen. You just get all these good things. And that same kind of comment came when I worked for the corporation. Oh, you're just lucky. I said, that's right. The harder I work, the luckier I get. Now, that was kind of sarcastic on my part, and the real reason was, yes, I did work very hard, but God gave me opened the doors, and he gave me favor in the eyes of the people, just like he did here with David, and the way he does for you. That's how he helps us, brethren, and he takes care of us in spite of the situations. But those in control who are affected by this, or potentially think they're going to be affected, and if they were wise, they would welcome the hard work of the person, because that person is doing nothing but trying to help them and help the company and help everybody do better. But they don't see that. They see only one thing, themselves and their own selfish motives. And so then they will do everything in their power. They will lie, they will malign, they will try to set traps for, and they will try to get rid of you because you are a threat to them. That's just the way it is. And like I said, having gone through this about four different times, I can give you some personal experience. It's not a pleasant experience to go through, but you simply have to back away, which I didn't always do, and trust God. And I would have lots of frustrations because I was trying to work it out myself, but when I finally would back away and really turn it over to God, well, then God says, oh, okay, now you're done trying to figure it out? Well, I'll show you what I can do. And he would take care of the problem. And it would go away quickly. And I was like, why didn't I do that before? How stupid. I just wasn't trusting God as much as I should have. I was trusting in myself and trying to fix it myself. Can't do that. So here we find that God was with David, and chapter 18, verse 18, but all Israel and Judah loved David. All Israel and Judah loved David because he went out and came in before them. He was serving them. He was working hard. And this is what you'll also find, that a lot of times if you're doing the job, the people that you're taking care of, they're very happy with you. They're not intimidated. They're happy to get your services. It's the other people who think they're going to lose a position or something. If they'd go along with it and respect it and use it to their advantage, they would be blessed. But when they try to stop it, that's when they lose. And they always lose in the end, even though there's lots of pain in the process. Every single situation, they lose. Every time. As long as you trust God, you win, they lose. But it may take some time. And Saul said to David, "Behold, my elder daughter." And he wanted to give her to be his wife. And he said, "So you can go out and you can be valiant for me and be my son-in-law and fight the Lord's battles." And the real reason was, Saul said, "Let not my hand be upon him, but let the hand of the Philistines be upon him. Get him into these battles and the Philistines will kill him, and then I won't have to worry about him." And unfortunately, later on, David used the same method. But that's much later in the story. And David said to Saul, "Who am I? What's my life and my father, family in Israel that I should be a son-in-law of the king?" He said, you know, and just skimming over this, he said, "I don't have much money. I am not a wealthy man. I don't have a dowry I can give you or any, you know, to do whatever." And if you jump down here to chapter 18 and verse 21, and Saul said, "I will give him," he talked about giving him his other daughter, "I will give him to her that she may be a snare to him and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him." Wherefore Saul said to David, "You shall this day be my son-in-law." In other words, right away. And Saul commanded his servants to commune with David secretly and to try to convince him to do this. And he just, in verse 25, he said, and Saul said, "Thus shall you say to David, the king desires not a dowry, but 100 foreskins of the Philistines to be avenged of the king's enemies." But Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. Well, David's thought, okay, well, that's fair. In verse 26, and when the servants told these words to David, he was happy. And he went out immediately to go to war. And verse 27, wherefore David arose and he went out with his men, and he didn't kill 100 Philistines, he killed 200. And David brought their foreskins and gave it in full to the king that he might be the king's son-in-law. And Saul gave him Michael, his daughter, to wife. And I'm sure that Saul received these presents, and it was like, oh, no. He probably said something else, but he wasn't a happy camper, and because he expected him to get killed. And in verse 29, Saul was yet more afraid of David. He was already afraid of him, and now he was really afraid. And Saul became David's enemy continually. Now here he is, his own father-in-law. He's working for Saul. He's doing all this work with the armies and going out and fighting battles. And his boss wants to kill him. That's a great idea. And he's having all these successes and making him look good and taking care of Israel. And the boss, the harder he works and the more he does, the more the boss wants to kill him. Not a good situation. And David had to learn through all of this because he was rather naive and he didn't fully understand all of this. And even at the time when Saul set him up, he didn't understand what the setup was. Oh, he got it later, but he didn't understand. So he went out and he got 200 instead of 100. And he thought, well, that'll make the boss happy. Well, it really made him upset. So eventually he began to understand. And in verse 30, then the princes of the Philistines went forth, and it came to pass after he went forth that David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so that his name was much set by, or in other words, it was well noted, or it had great reputation. And then he got very, later on, I can just skim over this, but he got very, very upset with his son Jonathan because he was defending David, and he's saying, look, what has he ever done? Chapter 19 and verse 2, but Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David, and Jonathan told David, saying, Saul, my father, seeks to kill you. Now, therefore, I pray you, take heed to yourself until the morning, and abide in a secret place, and hide yourself. And Jonathan spoke to David, of David, to Saul, his father, tried to put in a good word, so to speak, for him, and it didn't work. And he said unto him, let not, this is verse 4, the king sin against his servant, against David, because he has not sinned against you, and because his works have been to you very good. For he, in other words, he's making the king look great. For he did put his life in his hand, and he slew the Philistine, and the Lord wrought great salvation for all Israel. You saw it, and you rejoiced. Wherefore, then, will you sin against innocent blood to slay David without a cause? And Jonathan, verse 7, called David, and Jonathan showed him all those things. And Jonathan brought David to Saul to try to make peace, and he was in his presence as in times past. But that didn't change how Saul really felt. And there was war again, in verse 8. And David went out and fought with the Philistines and slew them with a great slaughter, and they fled from him. And the evil spirit from the Lord was upon Saul as he sat in his house with his javelin in his hand, and David played with his hand, and Saul sought to smite David again, even to the wall with the javelin, but he slipped away from Saul's presence, and he smote the javelin into the wall, and David fled and escaped that night. So then Saul sent messengers to David's house to lay for him, and his wife realized that this was happening, and he escaped through a window at night, and he was gone. And Saul, you know, he fled to Ramah. And Saul sent messengers, verse 20, to take David, and when they saw the company of the prophets prophesying and Samuel standing as appointed over them. And by the way, I started to tell you that once Saul was demoted and removed from king, Samuel never talked to Saul again till he died. He said, I'm having nothing to do with you. But he wept over Saul. He was very, very sorrowful. Samuel standing appointed them, the Spirit of God was upon the messengers of Saul, and they also prophesied. And then, chapter 20 and verse 1, and David fled in Ramah, and he came and said before Jonathan, what have I done? What is my iniquity? See, he was still pretty naive. And what is my sin before your father, that he seeks my life? This did not make any sense. The harder he worked, the more he did, the more he tried to do a good job, the more this guy was angry at him, and he just didn't understand what was going on. Well, he finally got the point. And he said, and David swore moreover in verse 3, and said, your father certainly knows that I have found grace in your eyes. And he said, let not Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved. In other words, that he wanted to kill him. But truly, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, there is but a step between me and death. He knew now that he was on the chopping block. Then Jonathan said to David, "Whatsoever your soul desires, I will do it for you." And David said to tomorrow, and then, well, he hid in the field, and he was going to go talk to his father. Jonathan was going to go talk to his father to try to talk him out of this thing. And when David's seat was empty at dinner, Jonathan began to confront his father about this. And in chapter 20 and verse 33, Saul became very, very upset at his own son, and he threw a javelin at him, whereby Jonathan knew that it was determined of his father to slay David. So, of course, David took off at that point. And when David had taken off to go to a safer place, his family heard about it, and they all joined him. And eventually there were 600 people there with him. And they were all there to protect him and to fight with him. But I'm going to have to end it right there, even though there's lots more to go here in this segment. And that takes care, in other words, to finish up I can just summarize here. David continued to seek God's direction. He had to keep hiding from Saul. I'm sure you all remember the example where Saul was out after him with all kinds of men and seeking him, and David was already in the cave, and Saul went into the cave to relieve himself. And when he did that, his men said, "Oh, now God has given us the opportunity to kill this guy and to get rid of him, just like God said was going to happen." But then David wouldn't do it, and he cut off Saul's robe privately, secretly. And then, this is down in chapter 24 and verse 5, "And it came to pass afterward that David's heart smote him because he had cut off Saul's skirt." He realized that was still the wrong thing to do. That was disrespectful. That was not honoring and keeping this thing in God's hands and letting God take care of it. He was starting to take it into his own hand. That's what we need to avoid. Believe me, I know that from personal experience. So David stayed his servants. He held them back, and he suffered them, or didn't allow them to rise against Saul. But Saul rose up out of the cave, and he went his way. And after he went out, David and his men came out of the cave behind him and began to call for Saul. And in verse 16 of chapter 24, "And it came to pass when David had made an end of speaking these words to Saul and saying, why are you doing this? Why are you trying to hurt me? That Saul said, 'Is this the voice of my son David?' And Saul lifted up his voice and he wept. And he said to David, 'You are more righteous than I.'" That was correct. "For thou hast rewarded me good, whereas I have rewarded you evil." And David swore to Saul. In other words, he continued his allegiance. And Saul went home, but David and his men, they gathered themselves up, and they went into hiding. And then Samuel died, and all the Israelites were gathered together and lamented over him and buried him in Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness. So he still stayed in hiding. But back in chapter 23 is a key verse here, chapter 23 and verse 7. "And it was told Saul that David was come to Keilah," I think it's pronounced, "and Saul said, 'God has delivered him into my hand, for he is shut in by entering into this town that has gates and bars.'" And, of course, David and his men escaped from that because he got word that Saul was coming. But here Saul still thought that God was supporting him in what he was doing. He just didn't get it. He did not get it. But he represented the world, the way the world looks at things, the way we have to face things in this world. And it's not easy. As soon as people see that you and I are starting to follow certain principles that go against the way of the world, they aren't going to be happy. They look at you as a weirdo or some kind of a fanatic or nutty or whatever, because they think you don't get it. The truth is, they don't get it. They will, but they don't get it right now. So the main lesson that I've learned from David was that you have to be totally trusting God. You have to be totally willing to admit you're wrong, and you have to keep learning. David learned. He gained wisdom, and he came to be a lot more insightful and perceptive than he was at first as this naive young man who was out there trying to do the best he could, thinking that was what was going to improve his situation. And sometimes we can fall into that trap. We have to be perceptive, and we have to realize how other people in this world think and how they look at you and how they look at me. They don't look at you the way you think they look at you. And once they understand how you believe, they might smile, but inside they're thinking, oh, this guy's a whatever. Or he's doing really well. He might take my job. And then, which means I got to get rid of this guy. And they'll do everything they can to do that. But God will protect us. He will take care of us just as he did David. But it may not be necessarily without some pain.